All right, let's call this meeting of the Senate Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:31 p.m. on Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. Let the record reflect that we also have a quorum present today. Are Senator Stevens, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Keel, Vice Chair Michicki, and myself, Senator Rivak, and we also have joining us virtually Senator Von Imhoff. Hello. Please silence your cell phones. Staffing the committee today is committee aide Emma Torkelson, LIO moderator Nate Williams, and Christopher Dickrell from Records. Thank you, as always, for your hard work. Today's agenda consists of three items. The first two items on are new bills, SB 134, Master Guide Outfitter Requirements, and SB 133, Remote Recreational Site Sales Permits. And the last item is a second hearing on SB 79, Hunting, Trapping, Fishing, Disabled Veterans. SB 134, let's get started. We have Senator Von Imhoff here online and her staff, Julie Lucky, joining us via Teams, and her other staff members available as well here in the room with us. And please remember to keep your mics on mute and your video off until asked to speak. Senator Von Imhoff, if you could please put yourself on the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair Rivak. This is Senator Natasha Von Imhoff, and I really appreciate you hearing this bill today. The story starts a couple years ago when we passed a big game commercial services board. We had an extension, a simple extension back in 2019. It was Senate Bill 43. And during the course of the board extension, we heard frustration regarding board disciplinary actions to certain guys who were violating the law pertaining to their profession. So we tried to fix it at the time, back in 2019, but there were unintended consequences due to the wording of the bill. And so we've been working with certain guides since then to try to fix it. And this Senate Bill 134 fixes the language and makes sure that it works as intended. And with the hunting season underway, it is important to get this issue addressed soon. And my staff, Julie Lucky here, is available, and she'll go over the details.
Thank you. Ms. Lucky, if you could please put yourself on the record and walk us through.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Julie Lucky, and I am staff to Senator Natasha Von Imhoff from District L. I would like to put just a little bit of context on the record. Just the Big Game Commercial Services Board regulates the activities of professionals that provide hunt, guide, outfitter, and transportation services to the big game hunters. As the Senator mentioned, during their last board reauthorization, there was some frustration about the timing of disciplinary actions. I just want to make clear for the record that the board did, prior to the passage of the language in Senate Bill 43 in 2019, have the power to revoke a license, but the licensees did have rights to due process. Investigations can take a while. There are numerous appeal opportunities, and if there is a criminal case, the board must wait until that court case is finished, and that was part of the delay of some of the cases we heard about back in 2019. This bill pertains to master guide licenses, and there is an expectation, and this was stated during the committee process, that master guides are the best of the best. I wanted to point out for the record, a master guide license does not give additional hunting rights, but it is an honorary designation given to registered guides who have demonstrated excellence over a long history in their profession. Also, if a person loses a master guide designation, they still have their registered guide license and can earn a living. And this was important during our deliberation of the language allowing or requiring the board to revoke master guide licenses in certain instances. And it is because a master guide, of course, could still have their livelihood, so it was seen that just revoking the master guide designation was an appropriate action for certain offenses. So back in 2019, the Senate Finance Committee's intent with the amendment was to require the board, as I said before, the board had the ability to do so, but this would require the board to revoke a master guide license after a criminal conviction for egregious violations of their professional code. The board, of course, would still have the discretion to allow the guide to keep their registered guide license and keep working. Unfortunately, after the law was put into place, it was interpreted to apply to any violation of the statute, no matter how small. That was clearly not the intent of the legislature. So what Senate Bill 134 does is creates a narrow class of egregious offenses for which a master guide license must be revoked. The language has been proposed by the board to meet the intent of the legislature and mirror existing statute to ensure it's interpreted correctly. At this time, Mr. Chairman, I can go over the bill in more detail. I could also provide the committee some insight about the board's process. And I must apologize. Unfortunately, with the hunting season started, we could not get a lot of board members or master guides here to provide expert testimony. But I have good notes, and I will do my best to speak for them if that's the will of the committee. Or at this point, I could go through the sectional, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like to let me know how to proceed.
Thank you, Ms. Lucky. I'd like to welcome, for the record, Senator Bishop to the committee. Senator Stevens has a question.
Thank you. Julie, could you just tell us what are the cases in which a license must be revoked? Could you just go through those?
Through the chairman, Senator Stevens, if I can point you towards, I provided in your packet, there should be some minutes from the big game. So actually, let me start with the those are some descriptions of the offenses. But that's actually, if I could go through the sectional of the bill really quickly, it's actually a little easier to go through it backwards. So in Section 2 is actually the revocation statute, and that will state the offenses, and it is a conviction for which a person is imprisoned for more than one day or an unsuspended fine of more than $1,500 is imposed. And those standards were created by the board after reviewing many of the cases that came before them and the disciplinary actions that were taken. And if, with the committee's indulgence, if you do look through the piece of paper I was referring to earlier, it's the minutes of the Big Game Commercial Services Board teleconference, and it's a 9-page document. It's dated February 20th, 2022. And on the last... 2020. Oh, sorry, 2020. Sorry. On the last page of the document, you can see these are historical cases, and this is where the board drew the line. You can see they've had 6 violations that they were working through. It's a table with a green, sorry, this is Senator Von Imhoff, it's a table with a green square around it. And these are examples of the types of violations. You can see I've highlighted in yellow. There's 2 of them where there was a revocation. Number 1,
sorry,
the hunt private lands, times 2,
that
can be made unlawful method of take.
Could you pause there for a second? We're going to take a brief at ease. All right, we're back on the record. Ms. Lucky, our files and Senator Von Imhoff, they don't have color. So if you could give us a better description of which graph this is.
Sure. Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Can I just confirm that the committee has a document that's the minute transcript?
Yes.
And it has a table, and it's a 9-page document?
Correct.
On the back, there's a table, and there should be a bar around it. Even though it's not green, it should be a thick bar. The last table on page 9 says the master guide outfitter, so these are violations of this class of license. And there's 6 enumerated sections there. And only number 1, the hunt private land times 2 and additional offenses, and then number 4 would meet the threshold for the revocation. And if you look at the table, these were violations that happened prior to our change in 2019, and those were the licenses that were revoked after the process went through. So what the board did in this process was to look at the violations for which revocations had happened, and this would just allow require the revocations to happen for these type of offenses.
Senator Stevens?
So it must be revoked. Is not for any reason, but for specific hunting violations. Do I understand that right?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that is correct. So that at this time, the language that was in Senate Bill 43 was interpreted to apply to any violations, and that is what we are trying to fix. And what this bill would do was say that the fine imposed would have to be more than $1,500, or if the person spent a day in jail. Those were the 2 conditions under which a master guide license would be required to be revoked.
And just to make sure I understand that, Julie, I mean, if someone were fined on a traffic accident or time in jail for something that's not related to hunting, that would not come under this this ruling, right?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that is correct, and I would point you to the bill on page 2, lines 19 through 20, and it clearly states who is convicted of a violation of any state or federal law or regulation, and here's the pertinent language, related to hunting or the provision of big game hunting or transportation services.
Great. Thank you very much, Julie.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Skipping up from the must revoke section to the eligible to get it in the first place section, can you talk about going down from the 15-year look back to just a 5-year look back? Help us with the reasoning there.
Certainly, through the chair, Senator Keel, and I'm sorry, I did not actually finish the sectional, so let me just put in a note about that. Senator Keel had stated, because the Section 2 had the shall revoke language, Section 1 was then conformed. So the Section 1 is eligibility for master guide licenses, and those sections were conformed to the Section 2.
So, Ms. Lucky, maybe at this time, if you wouldn't mind walking us through the sectional, if Senator Keel is that, okay. Thank you. Yeah, if you could please proceed through the sectional, that'd be great.
All right. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Section 1, as I said, refers to the eligibility for Master Guide licenses. So it points out all of the existing statutes that make a Master Guide eligible. They must meet all of the conditions listed on 1, 2, 3, and then on 4, you'll see the language that we are adding, and as Senator Keel had pointed out, we're changing from 15 years to 5 years. That's the look-back period, and then adding the language that a person cannot hold a Master Guide license if they were in prison for more than one day, had an unsuspended fine of $1,500 or more for those type of violations, and also add Section 5, has not had a hunting, guiding, outfitting, transporter, or similar license suspended or revoked in this state or another jurisdiction within the 5 years preceding. Section 2, again, is the shall revoke section, and it has the same language that was added, that person is in prison for more than one day or an unsuspended fine of $1,500 or more is imposed. And Senator Keel, hopefully there is somebody on the board that can answer some of these questions. I will say that one of the guiding principles of the board when it looked through the statute was to conform it to existing statute. And if you look, there should be another handout in your packet dealing with that shows the related existing statutes. So these are not statutes we're changing, but the related statutes. And the look-back period under the existing statute on eligibility for licenses was 5 years, and I believe the intent of taking it from 15 years to 5 years was to mirror that language with a look-back period. This was not a suggestion that we had, but this was board-suggested language.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Lucky, is there a provision in here? Is it how many times can you do this as a guide before your license is there a three strikes and you're out, or do we know? I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I believe it would be the five-year look-back period, but I would prefer if the board does have someone online that they would confirm that.
So just to clarify, Ms. Lucky, basically what this is if you have one of these violations, then you no longer can, then you have a five-year timeout from being able to receive a guide license. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, you would have to also be eligible for Master Guide license through all of the other requirements, but the look-back period for the Master Guide license would be 5 years.
Okay, so that's essentially right then. So if you got one of these violations, you wouldn't be able to receive a guide license for another 5 years, right?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman, but I did want to point out that you would also still have to meet all of the other requirements for the Master Guide license, but this would disqualify you for at least a period of 5 years.
At least, right. Okay, thank you. Other questions?
I'd like to ask the board that if somebody's on the line.
Did you say anybody was online from the board? We actually have Renee Hosford. Renee, if you're online, could you please, Senator Bishop actually has a question.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is Renee Hosford.
Okay, perfect. If you could put yourself on the record once Senator Bishop asks his question and respond, we'd appreciate it.
Renee, have you been following the conversation?
Yes, I have, through the chair. For the record, I'm Renee Hofford. I'm the executive administrator for the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
So my question is, how many times can you have a is there a three strike out and you lose your license forever, or can you I can have an offense and I'm in the timeout box for 5 years and I reapply just like a new guide? How many times can I do that before I lose my license forever, or is there such a thing?
Through the chair, in the statute, and it's not one that that is being suggested to be changed, there is actually a section L that says the board may issue a registered guide outfitter license to a person whose master guide license was revoked under K. If the board, once they review everything, determine not to issue that registered guide a license, they would no longer qualify for any type of a guide license. In order to qualify for the master guide license, they have to be a registered guide for 15 of the 20 years immediately preceding the date of their application. So if a master guide gets their license revoked and after 5 years they choose to reapply, that would only work if the board had chosen to issue them a registered guide license when they revoked the master guide license. If the offense is egregious enough, the board, based on counsel from the Department of Law, may not choose to issue them that registered guide license.
Thank you.
Other questions? All right. Seeing none, Ms. Lucky, is there anything else that you had to walk us through related to this bill?
Mr. Chairman, if I can have the committee's indulgence, I wanted to just hit two topics very briefly. In the testimony that the committee received, there was some concern about the may versus shall. While everybody agrees that the language does need to be fixed, there was some disagreement about how to fix it. So if you might recall from my earlier testimony, the board does have the may right now. So there are some people who would just like to see this section totally taken out of the statute. When the board gave us their recommendation, they were trying to follow the objective of following the legislative intent and find those egregious offenses, and that's what we believe we presented in Senate Bill 134. But I did want to bring to the committee's attention, because there is testimony and we have heard from other people that would prefer to just return that discretion to the board, that may discretion. There is in the board minutes that I referred to earlier a discussion about that, and you can read that. I believe it's on page 2, the first 10 lines of page 2, where they discuss the may versus shall question. And the board, after this discussion, went with the bill that's before you today that just narrows those offenses to the most egregious offenses. The second thing is the effective date. And as Senator Von Imhoff has said, the hunting season is going on now. There are people who are concerned about some of those violations. While currently no licenses have been revoked under this section, there is concern that a small violation might put a license in jeopardy. There's also concern that master guides will be less forthcoming to self-report minor violations, which they do, if they're concerned that their license shall be revoked. And I've heard that as violations happen, there's increasing tension between enforcement and master guides in that relationship, since the board lacks the discretion to allow a master guide to keep their license, there's been more pressure on the enforcement on the violation side. So the senator does have an amendment for an effective date. After discussion with legal and some other parties, the effective date that was decided upon was to go back to when Senate Bill 43 was enacted. And the reason for that was that when the legislature looked at Senate Bill 43, there was an understanding of what the language was supposed to do. That understanding was in place until there was a reinterpretation of the law. And so by using a retroactive effective date to the enactment date of Senate Bill 43, it allows the law to be consistent through time, so it would be consistently applied as the legislature intended from the effective date of Senate Bill 43, which was in September of 2019. And those are the only two things I wanted to bring to the committee's attention.
Thank you for the committee's information. We also have Sarah Chambers online, the Director of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing in the Department of Commerce, along with Renee. Do we have other questions from members of the committee? Okay, with that, we're going to move on to public testimony. Public testimony on SB 134 is now open. Do we have folks in the room who'd like to testify? Seeing none, do we have folks online who would like to testify? All right, we don't see any here. We're going to close public testimony. All right, are there amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I move conceptual amendment number one.
Is there any objection? All right, seeing none, conceptual amendment number one passes. Do we have further amendments? Seeing no more amendments, we're going to take a brief at ease. All right, we are back on the record. Thank you for the patience. What is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 134, version 32-LS069/96/Indigo as conceptually amended out of committee with the attached individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. And Mr. Chairman, I just want to add the conceptual amendment. Legal is directed to make any changes or deletions to the suggested language in order to accomplish that intent. I don't know if we needed to say that on the record or not, but I move the bill.
Thank you. Are there objections? Seeing no objections, Senate Bill 134, version 32-LS0696/I moves from committee with accompanying zero fiscal note and an authorized conceptual amendment changes for the ledge legal. We're going to take a brief at ease. All right, we're back on the record. Next, we're going to hear SB 133, Remote Recreational Sites Sales Permits. We have Marty Parsons online. He's the Director of Mining, Land, and Water from DNR, and he's going to provide us with a presentation, walk us through the bill. Marty, if you could please put yourself on the record and begin.
Chairman Reback, committee, for the record, my name is Marty Parsons. I'm the director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Chair Reback, as we go through this presentation, would you like to stop at each slide for questions or just proceed through the presentation?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind briefly pausing, that'd be great.
Absolutely. So, Chair Reback, this is the introduction of Senate Bill 133, which, as you mentioned, is the remote recreational sites providing for the sales, leases, and permitting of these sites. This is a continuing effort by the governor to increase the amount of Alaska lands into Alaskans' hands. We've been dealing with Senate Bill 97 and the amendment brought forward today, which are other steps to accomplish the same thing. This is another effort, another step towards fulfilling our constitutional intent of developing and settling Alaska lands. We're on slide two. Article 8 of the Constitution, Section 1, talks about, it's our intent to encourage the settlement of the land consistent with the public interest in a state where about 3% of the land mass is in ownership by individuals. That's a very small portion. It's obviously this administration's intent to expand that so that more people in Alaska can enjoy Alaska lands, to their fullest. On to slide three. This slide is a quick representation of the ownership of who owns Alaska. As you can see, a large chunk of Alaska is owned by the federal government. Our state ownership will expand a little bit over 26%, approaching 30% as we get the remainder of our entitlement. The Yangtze Corporations, which is a type of private ownership, is about $45 million. And then you've got the private ownership, the municipalities, private lands at about $12 million or just around 3%. On to slide four. So Senate Bill 133 provides multiple ways for Alaskans to procure a piece of Alaska. There, in the bill, there are ways to either purchase lands that the state has identified and for for this settlement purpose. They can lease it if they don't feel like they want to purchase a piece of land, or they can occupy up to 10 acres of state land under a permit. Now, the lands that we originally think will be part of this would be what has been referred to as vacant, unappropriated, unreserved land. That will make up probably the bulk of the list that the state maintains. But there's also the opportunity for someone to identify a piece of land that they're interested in, present that, and if it's not classified properly, work through the reclassification process to make that available for disposal. On to slide five.
Just a second. Do we have any questions for members of the committee? All right. Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Please continue.
Thank you, Chair Rivak. So as a quick history of where we are, currently we have AS3805600, which is the Remote Recreational Cabin Staking Program, where the state will identify certain portions of state land to be disposed of under a lottery for these remote recreational cabin sites that could be up to 20 acres. In this particular process, the state determines the area. They will say, let's just say there's a 7,500-acre parcel that's been identified. We may say that there's going to be five people that get an opportunity to go out and stake that land. So that would then, through a lottery system, they would be selected and have the opportunity to go on the land and stake it themselves. This is a follow-on program for what used to be the remote rec cabin. It was a permit, and at that point, no opportunity to own it, but just an opportunity to occupy the land. And prior to that, it was a open to entry program back in the mid and late 70s. It provided people to go out onto the land, any place in the state, and they and their family could stake up to 5 acre parcels. So on to slide six. And again, the current program of the remote staking program is a controlled program where the state, we go through a best interest finding, go through a public process, and then offer the lands as part of that staking program. See on page seven, these are some of the areas that.
Yes. Could you hold on, Marty? We have a question from Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Mr. Parsons, going back down to slide five, your last bullet point, since 2001, DNR has offered staking in 81 staking areas over 14 offerings. So describe what a staking area would be. Is that 50 parcels like we have here, or 10 parcels, or what would be a staking area, and then what would be an offering?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, if we look on slide seven, you'll see some areas that we have offered as staking areas. In the East Fork Pass, that's out by Nome. You have areas out by Fairbanks. The Mount Ryan is over, I believe, on the Taylor Highway, and of course Lake Louise. A staking area is where we will identify a certain number of acres, and it'll have we'll look at the topography. We'll look at how much land is uplands, whether there's any resources in the area that would require not to be included in the staking area. We obviously wouldn't put one on top of let's say a coal, oil, and gas or mineral lands. But we would identify 7,500, 20,000 acres. That would be an area where we would make an offering. And then inside of that offering, we would make an estimate of the density that we would want to have occupied. So maybe in a 20,000 acre, you say there's going to be 15 authorizations that would be offered within that offering area to go out and stake those individual parcels.
So follow up?
Yes, Senator Von Imhoff.
So thank you for slide seven. And so how many parcels have you sold since 2001? And like how many acres or how many individual parcels or how many, you know, deeds, I guess, how many sales have occurred?
Senator Von Imhoff, I don't have that number right in front of me. I know my folks in the land conveyance section can get that, and I will get that and provide it to the committee if that's acceptable.
Well, yes, but just a ballpark. I mean, we're looking at 50 parcels to start on this one. So are each one of these staking areas approximately 50 parcels so we can, you know, look at maybe 250 here, or are we looking more than that?
Senator Von Nemhoff, through the chair, it will depend on the individual offering. I mean, some could be 20,000 acres where we'd have 50. Some could be 7,500 acres where we'd only have 4 or 5, and that's why I hesitate a little bit to provide the number.
I may even
be able to have that number. I just don't have it off the top of my head.
All right, Senator Von Imhoff, are you finished?
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Senator Stevens.
Thank you. Thank you, Marty. Could you just explain the difference so I understand it between prove up and no prove up? And I assume prove up means you build a cabin. I assume no prove up means you do nothing. Can you just help me to understand that?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, yes, that would be correct. Under the old programs, there would be a prove up where you had to build a cabin or do certain amount of improvements before you would be able to move to or get the land title in your name. Under the remote rec cabin staking program, the individual who successfully went out and staked the land would have an opportunity to move into a lease for 3 years so that they could get the land surveyed and appraised and then provide that appraisal number to the state that would then move into a land purchase contract. And during that 3-year period, they could begin to make improvements, but they weren't required to make the improvements to get the title to the land.
Thank you. Is it follow-up?
Well, I guess I understand that, but don't we want these lands to be improved upon? And we don't want people just to buy this land and never do anything with it, do we? But that's what you're allowing. Is that right? Someone could lease it for 3 years, they did nothing, they would wind up owning it, and nothing would be done on the property, right?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, that would be technically correct. Most of these lands are fairly remote. So whether someone goes out and uses it to camp and take their family to it, build tent platforms and have them use it as a recreation site or put the time and effort into building a remote cabin, that's pretty much up to the individual and how they want to use that land.
Okay. Thank you, Marty.
Hmm? Thank you. Next we have Senator Machicki.
Yeah, we're asking a lot of questions early on, but I Director Parsons, aren't we repealing? This bill repeals the existing program. Is that correct? I participated in the Day Harbor staking years ago outside of Seward with a friend, and it was actually kind of awkward and a little difficult to execute, and there were definitely conflicts that I'm not sure that the process was exactly as sound as it could have been. So doesn't this bill repeal that program and propose a new program?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, yes, that is correct. This bill does repeal the current 3805-600 and replaces it with a new program.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. We have question from Senator Kawasaki, and then we'll continue with the slideshow.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it was mostly answered about the prove-up situation. So if a person were to just buy a piece of land, stake it, and then not want to build like a full, complete cabin, they could do like, like all they would do is just a platform for tents and things like that. That would be an acceptable prove-up.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, yeah, there is no prove up necessary under the current remote rec cabin staking program. They stake the land and appraise it and have it surveyed, and then they can determine how much of an improvement they want to make on the land, whether it's tent platforms, whether it's simple camping sites, whether they move towards a more permanent structure on those sites.
Thank you. And then just a different question.
Yes.
Under the remote rec cabin site or the stake it program, can that be used for a commercial facility?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, no, it cannot.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Partisans, if you would please continue with your... we have one more question from Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Senator Kawasaki just gave me a vision. I want to go a little deeper on that question of his. So I want to reaffirm it. Can't not be used for a commercial operation to include guides and outfitters, et cetera, et cetera. Is that...
Senator Bishop, through the chair, or through the... remote cabin staking program, that is correct. It will not be used for a commercial purpose. That was some of the impetus for the commercial portion of what's currently SB 97.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Please continue.
Thank you, Chair Rivak. So as we look at the next couple of slides, I just wanted to give the committee an idea of how far flung some of the efforts are that we've done on the remote staking program. You can see that we have offered we've had offerings and authorizations all over the state. So it's a wide flung program that we've tried to make sure that we had offerings like I showed in one of the previous slides from Nome. Down into Lake Louise, we've had some in Southeast, South Central. So it's pretty much all over the state. So now moving into what's in SB 133, as we said, it repeals the existing remote recreational cabin staking program. It provides for the commissioner to identify portions of the state that will be included in this program. So basically, a catalog would be kept that says this part of the state is open for participation in this program. A person would go out onto the land, survey it, have it appraised, apply to the state to have it to purchase that piece of land. Now, it also establishes the size. It'll be up to 10 acres only. Again, Alaskans could nominate lands that they would like to see included in the program. It would be something outside of the what we would call VUU, and I think we've worked through that definition of VUU. It's a certain type of classification identified for settlement. But if someone had decided they found a piece of land that was classified as maybe habitat or something that wasn't in a conveyable classification at the time, they could request a reclassification for that parcel that they nominate. And if it worked its way through the proper reclassification, it could then be they could then either purchase it, lease it, or occupy it under a permit. This particular bill also provides for how we would handle situations where someone might know that they don't know where somebody else is staked, so they stake over a portion of someone else's lot or staked parcel, and it provides the commissioner with a way to work through that. And it also provides that the commissioner will establish a set of regulations to implement the program. There's three ways within the program, as I mentioned earlier, that people can participate. One, of course, the outright purchase, where an individual stakes the piece of land that they want to, and I'm on slide 10 now, stake the piece of land. They would purchase it for fair market value. They're responsible for the survey and the appraisal. It also, this program also establishes a leasing program, which would allow someone to lease for 10 years a 10-acre parcel, and then the ability to renew that lease for a period no greater than what their original lease was two additional times. So if they got a 10-year lease, they could basically occupy that land for 30 years. And at the end of it, if they or their family wanted to, they could convert it to a purchase. There's the process for how we would terminate. There's a time frame from when the appraisal and the survey needs to be completed after the application has been accepted. And what we look for is how the boundaries of that, those particular parcels would be identified and marked.
All right, we have a question from Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Parsons, the appraisal, is that done by DNR in-house and then the applicant just is billed from DNR? How does the appraisal work?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, those are one of the things we would work through as part of the regulations that we would need to adopt. Currently, under the staking program, the state takes on the responsibility for both surveying and appraisal, because we can contract one company to go out and do all of them at one time, and so it adds some economies of scale. Currently, the way it's intended, it would be that the individual would be responsible for going out and doing the survey and doing the appraisal. But that's something that I know internally we've discussed that we can handle as part of our regulatory process.
Okay, and then follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, follow up, please.
The survey, I'm assuming, would have to be a current licensed surveyor in the state of Alaska.
Senator Bishop, through the chair, that is correct. For it to be an official survey, it would have to be done by a licensed surveyor.
Thank you.
Next question.
Okay, thanks, Senator Von Imhoff. We'll throw you on the list. Next, we have Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you, Director Parsons. One of the reasons this bill is here is from some conversations we had earlier in the year. And part of those, the problems that are existing is you have families that have leased land for generations, and that's been through a little bit of a trickier leasing program. I think we can all agree. So those lots are surveyed, and they have been under lease. Could those lands also be included in sort of a right of first refusal purchase by the individuals that have sometimes leased those lands since the early 80s?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, I believe we're referring to the private use or personal use, cabin program. We believe that, except in those areas where those cabins would be within a legislatively designated area, there will be an opportunity for them to participate in this program and convert those permits, leases, into a purchase.
Okay, you said we believe, but does that mean that we kind of have a path forward on that? I mean, that's what kind of started this conversation.
Senator Machicki, without getting myself in too much trouble with the Department of Law, it would be our intent to find a way to get those individuals who had been participating in the PUCP program to be able to participate and gain title of those lands.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you. Marty, could you talk about the assignment of a lease and what kind of restrictions are you placing on that assignment?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, under this particular bill, the lease could not be assigned. Now, it could pass on, that's on page 10. Line 13, where we talk about a lease may not be assigned, conveyed, or otherwise transfer the lease except through an estate or intestate succession. So there is a way for it to remain in the family, but it, that lease could not be transferred to someone else.
Okay, so it could pass on to family members through through wills, I suppose, or yeah. I think I understand you.
Senator Stevens, through the chair, as I read the bill, that is correct. Fortunately, I think we have Chris Orman from the Department of Law to answer those questions if I have misstepped.
Chris, if you're online, could you please put yourself on the record and give us your opinion?
Yes, Chris Orman, Department of Law, Assistant Attorney General, Natural Resource Section. Senator Stevens, through the chair, that's correct. Mr. Parsons has actually pointed to the section pursuant to leases. It's page 10. It's lines 13 and 14 in particular, that the lease may not be assigned or conveyed in any other way, but can devolve, i.e. pass through via estate or intestate succession. So, yes, in a will or through those means. I'll also note, just because you're in that provision, that lines 18 and 19 on page 10 talk about other restrictions that may be placed. I know that wasn't necessarily the question, but it does provide DNR some discretion as far as other covenants and other restrictions on the lease. So I hope I answer your question.
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to sort of wrap my head around so that if I understand correctly, Director Parsons, the biggest difference here may be that instead of doing a best interest finding on 75,000 acres or so where people can go out and stake, all the vacant unreserved land is available for it. Did I get that right?
Senator Keel, through the chair, yes, that is correct. As opposed to us doing a best interest finding under 035, this would basically say that the commissioner has a list of areas that is available for people to go and stake. And from our understanding, it would be a subset of the VUU land that the commissioner could either put all of it in there or a portion of it for it to be included.
Follow up. Thank you. So there was an earlier comment that we wouldn't want to put, you know, these staking programs over top of a coal seam or a potentially commercial mineral site. How then do we prevent that?
Senator Keel, through the chair, the land classification is the way that we prevent that. If lands are classified for mineral development, for oil and gas, for leasables, for some other type of non-conveyable classification, then they are not included in the set of lands that are available to participate in this program.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. We keep hearing we've got better maps of the moon than of Alaska. I wonder if we're as confident as all that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Rebeck. So, looking at slide 10, it says establishing a process for leasing a remote recreational site, and I do see that part of that process is hiring new full-time employees. And I just want to fully understand the intent and need behind five full-time employees. For example, a full-time land surveyor, when I see on the chart there's 10 surveyors already on staff with DNR, especially when you stated earlier that you may be outsourcing the surveying and appraising to other entities. So is this truly necessary, and especially in the spirit of our administration who is trying to decrease the footprint of government?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, we looked at this very carefully, and we believe that this is going to be a very popular program with the people of the state of Alaska. If we are correct, then it's going to require a surveyor that primarily does nothing but write survey instructions, review plats, do the administrative work that accurately maps, records, identifies where these parcels are, where the ownership is, that it meets all the criteria for the platting processes, especially if it happens to be within existing boroughs. So yes, we believe that the workload necessary, it will be necessary to hire additional staff as far as appraisers, land surveyors, and then the staff to administer the program.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Parsons, I appreciate that, but I think it's very important to state on the record right now with this charting information I have in front of me. The Department of Natural Resources has 210 employees total. There are already 10 full-time land surveyors, level one. There's 10 already. There are 12 full-time natural resource managers, one. There are 52 full-time natural resources specialists, range two. There's 52 positions already, and there's full-time appraiser, level two. There's four of them already. I just want to state that on the record. I don't know what kind of workload each of these employees, a group of employees, have right now. I don't know if there's land surveying needs that are just hoppity-buck in DNR that folks are overwhelmed and could hardly take on new job duties. I don't know if this could be absorbed or if this department is completely overwhelmed with the work that they have now. But I just want on the record that I am cautious and wary for this $750,000 fiscal note for five new full-time employees. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Your huckety buck has been received and recorded. Next, we have Senator Bishop.
I forgot my question after that question from the Senator Von Imhoff, so I'll have to yield and come back to that. Oh, I got it. It just had a vision. Mr. Parsons, on the sale of this property, would the terms and conditions still be available on these sites, like would an individual still be able to use the same process that is in place now at DNR for these subdivisions that you put out now in where the state is carrying the note and you're making payments to the state?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, yes, that same program is available for contract sales, whether it be through one of our through our subdivisions, the purchases under the current remote recreational staking program goes through the same has the same program available, and this program would as well.
Thank you. That option is there. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki.
Thanks. Thank you, Marty. I had a question relating to Senator Keel's question about the vacant, unappropriated, and unreserved lands. Do we know, this is actually referring to the map that's on the next page, there's some blue. Do we know or do we not know whether each of those parcels and potential VUU lands aren't critical habitat or that they do not have something in there that would preclude a sale at this point in time? Or do we already know that there's nothing in those blue areas?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, the map that you refer to, I believe, on slide 12, is our current best estimate of going through and looking at what VUU lands might be available for the program. I cannot tell you at this point 100% every acre of that it is unencumbered or is available. I can tell you that it is not classified for habitat. It's not classified for minerals. It's currently not under selection has not been approved to municipality as part of their land entitlement. This is a first step, and before we would go out to the public, we would do a much more rigorous scrubbing of those lands There are some files that are still in paper format that we would have to pull together and make sure that all of that information was consistent before we would go out to the public with a map that identified areas that would be open for inclusion in this program.
So follow up.
Yes, follow up.
So Marty, so the best interest findings wouldn't be required, but just a simple written finding by the director, with some caveats in section 2 of the bill. I'm just curious what other studies would be required in order for the director to make a written finding. I think if their written finding says that it's final, would they require similar to what a best interest finding would be, or would it be very, you know, it sounds like we want to just rush this through. And I'll say, because I had a bill like this several years ago, I think I worked with you on it actually, and that always came up as an issue where, I wanted to try and make it easier than the remote recreational cabin site licensing. And so I introduced a bill similar to this actually, and that always came up as a problem because, you know, the best interest findings are fairly complete. We don't want to just say, go at it, you can pick whatever land you want. I actually modeled it after Bud Fate's bill that he introduced in like the 19th legislature. Because I like the concept, I like the idea, but then when you get down to the complexities, it was really tough. So I guess if you can explain just sort of the process in which the studies would go on so that the director was well educated on whether this process should go forward or not.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. I do remember that bill. and yes, there's not the necessity for the 035 finding, we would still as the director of DMLW look at the same types of things. We would dig in and make sure that the lands that were part of this weren't encumbered by pipelines or by easements, leases, other authorizations that would be out there, or that a municipality hadn't had that approved to them, so that they basically had equitable title and that we wouldn't be stepping on the toes of municipality as far as their entitlement. We'll have to go through a very rigorous process before we identify the lands that would be included in this program. So it will be very similar to the process. What will basically happen is on the back end of the process, it will not require the same amount of work to convey the land and enter into the contract and enter that authorization. But the front end will be very similar.
Okay, I'll reconnect with you later. Thank you, Marty, and great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Next, Senator Michiki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Director Parsons. So this is, I don't, probably some of the members know this. I think this is the third or fourth remote cabin site program. The first one was the Prove Up, ended in like 97, and then there was the current remote recreational cabin sites. I mean, all that land had to be approved for lease or transfer previously. This is really just a different system of kind of some of the same thing. Is that correct, first of all?
Senator Michiki, through the chair, I think that's a fairly accurate description. What this does is this, as opposed to smaller discrete parcels, this takes a statewide look and broadens the aperture of what we might look at to include in the program.
Okay. And then I have a follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up?
Yeah, Mr. Parsons, I was looking at the fiscal note because I was concerned as well with what Senator Von Imhoff said, but am I reading this correct that you're 750? So you have DGF essentially having the program fund itself. The 750 you have is expected revenue over and above the cost of the program. Is that correct? Reading the analysis on the back page, you're expecting 750 to 2.5 million of annual sales paid over time. Is that correct?
That is our estimate of what the revenue would be from participation in the program. So I think it's, I believe it's 500 and some odd thousand for the individuals that participate in the program, and that's our expense. 569.9 for expense with, and then a revenue of an increase of 750. So it's a net little less than $200,000 positive.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Were you finished with your presentation, or did you have a bit more to go?
Senator Rivak, that is the end of my presentation. I am more than happy to answer questions, and I have also asked Chris Orman to be available if it's the will of the committee to go through a sectional on this bill.
Thanks. We have a question from Senator Bishop.
Mr. Parsons, can you go back to that map that's as good as the moon map? So the blue, is that available for lease and staking?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, that is our initial, very preliminary analysis of the land that could be. We haven't had a chance to drill down on all of it as far as we would like to. We tried to make this map to give a representation of where the lands are located.
Okay, but so that's the first initial step, and then you also said in the bill that an individual could nominate outside that blue quadrants or blue paint.
Senator Bishop, through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, if you could please walk us through the sectional quickly, I'd appreciate that.
So, Senator Rivak, I would turn that over to Chris Orman from the Department of Law.
Senator Rivak, Chris Orman, Department of Law. Mr. Parsons, I think, knows that I typically am available to answer legal questions. I mean, I can quickly do, you know, outline kind of the sections of the bill, but typically I know that I'm not doing, I'm providing sectionals. So I ask others to then bear with me if that is the case.
Well, we'll actually wait on that then. We're pressing time here for committee, and so our intent is to hold this bill and pick it up at a later date, and so we can all have an opportunity to look through the sectional. If we have questions, we can pick it up. We do have a question from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, actually, I have a request, Mr. Chairman, for Mr. Parsons, if we could get a little bit better detail of the vacant, unappropriated, unreserved lands. A little difficult on this map, but I don't know if you have something of better quality even in sections that perhaps we have some idea what types of lands we might be talking about for the actual approved program, not the ones that someone might suggest, or I can't remember the terminology, nominate that's outside of those areas, but it would be nice to have some detail.
That would be nice, Mr. Parsons. If you could, if you could send some detailed, a little bit more detailed maps to our office, we can distribute. Or do you have, yes. Before we get to you, Marty, Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, your staff has put a much more detailed, zoomable map on the basis site for today's meeting. Your staff is good.
Oh, perfect. So we have it online. We're still using the paper and pencil here. Marty, do you have anything to add to that?
Chair Rivek, no, I do not. We did provide there, of course, the map that's in the presentation, but then that Senator Tequila is correct. There is a more detailed map where you can zoom in and get a better look at those areas in better detail. We could pick a few sites and prepare something so that you could kind of see what they look like. But again, this was our very, very first look at what might be out there, and we've got a lot of work to do before we could, before I would be feel very comfortable providing this is exactly what we would be offering at this point.
That sounds good, Marty. We'll take a look at those online, and if we have questions, we'll get with you. And also, again, on the sectional analysis, if committee members have questions on that, we'll get with you between now and the next hearing. Any additional questions? All right, seeing none, we're going to open public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone online who would like to testify? Okay, seeing none, is there anyone in the room? No, seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. All right, like we said, we're going to hold this bill, get some questions answered, and for further consideration. I appreciate all the folks online. Marty and Chris, we appreciate you being willing here to walk us through this bill. Next, we're going to move on to SB 79. We first heard the bill and took public testimony on March 15th. We have a committee substitute before us that makes substantive changes. And please, Senator Keel, if you could place yourself on the record and walk us through.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jesse Keel, Senator for District Q, Northern Southeast Alaska. The CS that you see before you takes the original bill, which, just as a reminder, added veterans with a service-related disability to the permanent ID card that we give senior citizens, so hunting, fishing, and trapping. Right now, before the bill, they qualify only for a hunting and fishing license for free. So that's the underlying bill. What the CS does at the request of the department, and I want to thank the Department of Fish and Game for their work on this issue and bringing these ideas forward. It starts by cleaning up a little technical issue. In the past, that disabled veteran license was supposed to be annual. They have been issuing that as a permanent card, hunting, fishing only. This would add it to the permanent statute so that our law matches good current practice. Then it makes a couple of more substantive changes, as you said, Mr. Chairman. currently, Alaska gives active duty National Guard members and members of the reserves who are Alaska residents free annual hunting and fishing license. This would add trapping to that. Again, that would remain on an annual basis. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to look to my staff to make sure I hit all the changes. Okay. To touch on the fiscal issue and a correction from something I believe I said wrong in the initial presentation on the bill. We talked about a number of trapping licenses sold in Alaska each year, and I misstated it. I said there were just under 900. There are just under 900 exclusively trapping licenses sold in Alaska each year. That's the possible universe of revenue loss under this bill. There are vastly, vastly more combined hunt, fish, trap licenses sold in Alaska every year, Mr. Chairman. But there'd be no reason for a disabled veteran or an active duty guard member to buy a combined hunt, fish, trap license when the state of Alaska honors their service with a free hunt, fish license. So the universe of what this bill could affect fiscally is really fewer than 900 exclusively trapping licenses.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Do we have questions from committee members?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Stevens.
This may be totally inappropriate, but an act providing for trapping licenses for active members of the National Guard. Of course, we understand you're not allowing them to trap active members of the National Guard, but wouldn't it be better to say by an act providing for trapping license by active members? I mean, just a thought. Maybe a little silly, Mr. Chairman, but.
No, it is. That's a good question, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is late in the day. Luckily, the bill does not make any changes in allowable species.
Thank you.
Thank you. Does that suffice, Senator Stevens?
If Senator Keel is happy with it, I'm happy with it.
Okay.
So should we move the committee substitute, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill. I move to adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 79, version 32-LS0003, / whiskey.
Thank you. Are there any objections? All right, seeing none, then the committee substitute is before us. Are there any additional questions? Yes, Senator Machicki.
Thank you. This is for the sponsor, Mr. Chairman. Is there still a zero fiscal note on this bill, and how does that work, Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, the department has looked this over and says that their initial fiscal note is still appropriate for this bill.
Senator Machicki?
Do we have an expectation of the number? So you talked about the total amount. I'm having a difficult time understanding how that's zero. I support the bill. Just like to look at real numbers when we're having that discussion.
Oh, great. Maybe we could get a lifeline here, if you wouldn't mind coming forward, putting yourself on the record, and addressing the issue.
For the record, Rachel Hankey, legislative liaison for the Department of Fish and Game. That exclusive number of trapping licenses will remain the same. This adds trapping for active duty reserve members. Again, we don't expect that number to be very large, and we expect the impact to be minimal.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you for that, Ms. Sankey. All right, seeing none, what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 79, version 32-LS0003, / whiskey, as conceptually amended, out of committee with the attached individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note. I don't believe we have any conceptual amendments, but it was on the script, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. If you wouldn't mind us, could you please restate that?
Yes. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 79, version 32-LS0003, / whiskey, out of committee with the attached individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Are there objections? All right. Seeing none, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 79, version 32-LS0003, / whiskey, as described, moves from the committee. We're going to close now. Our next meeting is scheduled for Friday, May 7th, for bills previously heard. We'll let the members know if we'll be considering bills any closer to that date. We'll follow up with your office ahead of time. So thank you very much for the attentiveness and everybody online here to testify. Senator Von Imhoff joining us remotely. We appreciate it. The meeting is now adjourned at 4:50 p.m.